Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 19, the appearance of Sukadeva Goswami, and we're covering text number 25 through 31. So we'll read together text number 25 and the purport, and then we'll read the translations of the other verses. So the picture was for what? Oh, it's a secret. Okay. I thought they were doing a film for the yearbook. Well, that's done already. Okay, word meanings. Tatra there, Abhavat appeared, Bhagavan, powerful, Vyasaputra, son of Vyasadev, Jadrich Chaya, as one desires, Gam, the earth, Atamana, while traveling, Anapeksha, disinterested, Alaksha, unmanifested, Linga, symptoms, Nijalabha, self-realized, Tusta, satisfied, Rita, surrounded, Cha, and Balai, by children, Avaduta, neglected by others, Vesha, dress. Tatra Bhavad Bhagavan Vyasputo. Yadrich Chayagam Atamanu Nipsnapiksha. Alakshalingo Nijalabhatusto. Ritascha Balair Avaduta Vesha. Tatra Bhavad Bhagavan Vyasputro. Jagrich Chayagam Atamano Napiksha. Alakshalingo Nijalabhatusto. Ritascha Balair Avaduta Vesha. Yadrishcha gam amatamano peksha. Alakshalingo nijalabhatusto. Vichascha balai rabaduta vesha. Tatra bhavad bhagavan prayasputro. Yadrishchaya gam atamananupeksha. Alakshalingo nijalabhatusto Vitascha balaravaduta veshaha. Tata bhavad bhagavan vyasputro Narishchaya gamatamana nabheksha. Alakshalingo nijalabhatusto Vitascha balaravaduta veshaha. Thank you. Translation. At that moment, there appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva, who traveled all over the earth disinterested and satisfied within himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded with women and children, and he dressed as if he had, as if others had neglected him. So I'm going to read the purport.
The word Bhagavan is sometimes used in relation with some of the great devotees of the Lord, like Shukadeva Goswami. Such liberated souls are disinterested in the affairs of this material world because they are self-satisfied by the great achievements of devotional service. As explained before, Shukadeva Goswami never accepted any formal spiritual master, nor did he undergo any formal reformatory performances. His father, Vyasadeva, was his natural spiritual master because Shukadeva Goswami heard Srimad Bhagavatam from him. After this, he became completely self-satisfied. Thus, he was not dependent on any formal process. The formal processes are necessary for those who are expected to reach the stage of complete liberation. But Sri Sukadeva Goswami was already in that status by the grace of his father. As a young boy, he was expected to be properly dressed, but he went about naked and was uninterested in social customs. He was neglected by the general populace, and inquisitive boys and women surrounded him as if he were a madman. He thus appears on the scene while traveling on the earth of his own accord. It appears that upon the inquiry of Maharaj Parikshit, the great sages were not unanimous in their decision as to what was to be done. For spiritual salvation, there were many prescriptions according to the different modes of different persons. But the ultimate aim of life is to attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional service to the Lord. As doctors differ, so also sages differ in their different prescriptions. While such things were going on, the great and powerful son of Vyasadeva appeared on the scene.
Okay. So I guess you know the setting here. Maharaj Parikshit has come to the bank of the Ganges. He's sitting with the sages there. And there's some discussion about what he should do with his the remainder of his life. And on the scene appears Sri Sukadeva Goswami. So we're going to read the verses that follows this up to text number 31. And I want you to pay close attention to three areas which we're going to talk about in the class today. One is the physical appearance of Sri Sukadeva Goswami. The other is the standard of greeting that we see when he appears on the scene. And the third is the significance of that meeting. Okay. So, you want to read the text number 26 and just read the text as we go through?
The son of Vyasadeva was only 16 years old. His legs, hands, thighs, arms, shoulders, forehead, and the other parts of his body were all delicately formed. His eyes were beautifully wide, and his nose and ears were highly raised. He had a very attractive face, and his neck was well-formed and beautiful like a conch shell. A respectable personality is described.
Oh, we want to do just the verses, so text number 27.
His collarbone was fleshy, his chest broad and thick, his navel deep, and his abdomen beautifully striped. His arms were long, and curly hair was strewn over his beautiful face. He was naked, and the hue of his body reflected that of Lord Krishna.
He was blackish and beautiful due to his youth, because of the glamour of his body and attractive smiles. He was pleasing to women. Though he tried to cover his natural glories, the great sages present there were all expert in the art of physiognomy, and so they honor him by raising him.
Maharaj Parikshit, who is also known as Vishnuvrata, one who is always protected by Vishnu, bowed his head to receive the chief guest, Sukadev Goswami. At that time, all the ignorant women and boys ceased following Srila Sukadev. Receiving respect from all, Sukadev Goswami took his exalted seat.
Sukadev Goswami was then surrounded by saintly sages and demigods, just as the moon is surrounded by stars, planets, and other heavenly bodies. His presence was gorgeous, and he was respected for a while.
The sage Sri Sukadev Goswami sat perfectly pacified, intelligent, and ready to answer any question without hesitation. The great devotee Maharaj Parikshit approached him, offered his respects by bowing before him, and politely inquired with sweet words and folded hands.
Okay. So as I mentioned, and I hope you noticed as we went through those verses, of course there are volumes of instruction here, but three things that we want to focus on today, the physical appearance of Sukadev Goswami and the meaning there, the standard of greeting that was present when he arrived in the Assembly of Sages, and the significance of that meeting. Let's take the last first, the significance of the meeting. And I think the way that I'd like to do this is to get some participation from you. You know, I'll begin it with my own contribution here. But we should understand that when we are given the introduction to Krishna, or when we meet devotees of the Lord, it's not an ordinary thing. It's not an ordinary thing at all. It's quite extraordinary, as a matter of fact. The fact that Sukadev Goswami appeared on the scene just when he was wandering sort of aimlessly. He wasn't directed to the going to the place on the bank of the Ganges where Maharaj Parikshit was there. That wasn't his intention. He was just wandering aimlessly, so-called aimlessly. But was it aimless wandering? Or was it under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He just happened to arrive there just when they were trying to decide what was the best course of activities for Maharaj Parikshit, how to use his life. He just happened to have the answer. I mean, is there any chance in this at all? Of course not. There's no chance. It's all the plan of the Lord. Now, the plan of the Lord is beyond our perception, but we are the recipients of it. Just like Maharaj Parikshit is a recipient of the presence of Sukadev Goswami just when he needed it, all of us are also the recipient of the Lord's mercy in the form of his devotees, in the form of transcendental literature, just when we need it, just when we need it most. And I'd like you to reflect on that, about what mystical experience you had when you first met the devotees or first came in contact with these teachings. And as I said, I can start off and let you know my own history here. And it's not necessarily when I joined, but when I became aware and when I actually experienced something mystical. I was like anybody else, just a degraded young person. Not you, but I mean others. just a degraded young person, and I was I didn't live at home, but I actually went home and to visit my parents. And my brother, he still lived at home. He went to school in New York City, and I guess when he was there, he must have gotten a book or something like that from the devotees. So I was in the bedroom that we used to share and with him, and I was just in the process of reaching for some unmentionable engagement when my eye caught, or the book caught my eye, Beyond Birth and Death. I don't know if you know that cover that he had initially with a skull with a flower growing out of the skull. You remember that? Yeah. So that caught my eye, and I thought, well, what's this? So I actually ceased my material endeavor and went instead to the book. And I picked up that book, and I looked at it, and went through it, and then put it down and went back to my material endeavors. But actually, I was halted in my progress materially by Prabhupada's book like that. And that had its fruit, because a few weeks after that, I went to New York City for the wedding of a friend of mine. And as I was leaving, I was passing through Port Authority bus terminal. And as I was walking, again, my eye was caught by Prabhupada's books. In my brief encounter with that Beyond Birth and Death, on the back page, there was an advertisement for Bhagavad Gita. And it had a picture of Krishna and Arjuna on the cover and Bhagavad Gita as it is. And as I was walking through Port Authority, that image caught my eye. I don't know if you've ever been in Port Authority bus terminal, but huge, huge facility. Thousands of people walking. Easy to be distracted by so many things. But somehow or another, that cover of Bhagavad Gita caught my eye under the arm of a devotee. Not the devotee. It wasn't the devotee. It was actually a good friend of mine, Ragatmika Dasi. She's a... I think she was in a sari or something, but that didn't have any... Just that cover under her arm. She had the book under her arm like this, but I could see that cover of Krishna and Arjuna. And so it stopped me right in my tracks. Right in my tracks, I stopped and I waited for her. I mean, how many people wait for a book distributor to finish with somebody else? to be, you know, hit up, you know. I stopped right in my tracks in the middle of Port Authority bus terminal and waited, because that cover caught my eye. And so when she was finished, I said to her, what's that you got there? And that's a line that the Sankirtan devotees ask you. You know, you don't ask the Sankirtan. But that book cover, you know, caught my eye. That was Krishna grabbing me. That was Krishna attracting me. And when I look back on it, I see it was truly a mystical experience, because it wasn't as if, you know, I was looking for Krishna. Just his attractiveness in his book form attracted me. So I bought all big stack of books from her, and I got on the bus to go back to Albany, New York, where I was living. And an Indian gentleman was getting on the bus, and he saw me with all these big stack of books. And I don't know how good of a closer look he must have seen on it, but obviously he recognized something, because he said to me, good luck on your path. I didn't know I was on a path. I just had purchased this big stack of books. But he said that to me. And when I look back on it, that was actually Krishna, like, snatching me from the material world, attracting me, giving me some out of the material world. And so it wasn't a chance occurrence with Prabhupada's books. It was actually the active endeavor of the spiritual master coming and rescuing us in material existence. So that's my experience of the mystical experience of coming in contact just when I needed it, right at the right time, Krishna appearing in my life. Does anybody have something they'd like to share about? Everyone has? I mean, we've probably done this before, but it never hurts to do it again because we're recognizing Krishna. Anybody want to share something? Joe? Maybe we should keep it a little brief because we do have to go. Cool.
Yeah.
I would definitely equate my first encounter with the devotees as a mystical experience. I remember that very week, April 9th of 2004, and I was just praying like anything to God, the best I knew of God, to make this life make sense. I've been to so many churches, talked to so many religious people, and I just had questions that I never would have had a satisfied answer. And it just got to the point where I wasn't in any extreme suffering. I had a nice job by all means. I had a loft apartment in the downtown city right next to a job in the college I was going to, and was making a decent income. Had a nice situation with friends and family, and I was just like, okay, so what's next? You know, and I just started getting frustrated with the idea that I was going to be getting old and wrinkled and like this. And that very week when I was just, you know, people go to the gym. I worked at the gym at that time. They say, oh, I worked a muscle today. I didn't even know I had. I was praying in ways I didn't know I could. And that week I met this family of devotees that was just passing through Dayton, Ohio. No temple, no anything. They were just passing through. And I meet them in the most coincidental way. I just finished reading this book. I had mentioned about sometimes you come across people you feel inspired to talk to or share a word with, or they just catch your eye. And I saw this person, made eye contact, the strangest eye contact, almost as if they were just like, hello. And I didn't do anything about it. I thought it was too weird. The next day it happened again. And I thought, okay, this is strange. I have nothing to say to this person at all other than I just read this book and I'm feeling inclined to speak to them. I said, okay, if I see them again, I'll do it. So the next day I was actually looking for them the whole day in that same area and didn't see them at all. Gave up on it, started walking down the steps, practically ran into them face to face. And I was like, have you ever read this book by James Redfield? You know, blah, blah, blah. And like this. And their look on their face was just astonishment. Their jaw dropped. It was, I just finished reading it, and I was just thinking about, you know, saying something to you about that. And then after 2 hours of talking after that, they was like, you have to meet my father. You have to meet my father. He does bhakti yoga. You're going to just love this guy. You're going to love my dad. You're going to love him. I was like, well, maybe something. Like, no, you have to come over tonight. You have to come over tonight. So just as crazy as it was, I was like, okay. Went over, found myself sitting at the dinner table, having my first plate of prasadam, asking all kinds of questions about bhakti yoga.
Beautiful. Thank you. Anybody else want to share something? Nobody? Okay. Okay. We'll get you also.
Well, I'll try to keep it short. The first time I saw a devotee, I didn't know it was a devotee. It was Tulsi Rani, Devi Dasi, who came into this glass shop where I was working. And I think I made some screens for her that I found out later went to a devotee's home in Alachua. But when she walked in, I just thought, okay, well, I had only been in Gainesville for like 3 months, and I thought, I mean, she's wearing a sari, you know. She was straight from the temple, and I was like, huh, Gainesville's an interesting place. And then, like, 5 months later, four or five months later, I was going through a lot of stuff. Relationship ended. I moved into a new place, and it was a nice place. I moved into a nice place. I felt like it was a new start on life. I thought I was happy. I was wasting money. I was like going out and drinking almost every day. Well, actually, before that, I should say before I moved out, working that same job with Windows, I went to, the middle of January, freezing day, I went one morning to a house in Turkey Creek off of 441 to put in some new windows, and it was Gaurabhakta Hodar Mataji's house. Gaurabhakti's house. And the first room I walked into in the house was where the altar is. And I didn't know that much about it. I just thought, okay, this is, definitely like a Hindu family, you know. And I looked at the bookshelf next to it. I've always been attracted to books. And I saw all these books, these big volumes of books lined up called Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'd heard of the Bhagavad Gita, and I thought, well, this must somehow be connected to the Bhagavad Gita. I wonder I wonder what's in those books. You know, I really want to know what's in those books. And so later on, like after I finished up, I was cleaning up and I spoke to her a little bit and I mentioned that I've been doing some Hatha Yoga, and she gave me two books. One of them was Yoga for the 21st Century by Timal Krishnamurti. Because she said, oh, you're interested in yoga, you should take this. And so I read it. I was reading it a little bit over the next month, like as I was moving out and resituating my life. And then I read the part in it where they introduced the mantra to the main character of the book. And I just tried it. After I did like a few exercises and like yoga postures by myself, I just sat down in my room and tried the mantra for a few minutes. And I felt really peaceful. I didn't know why. I mean, I thought it was just some words that made you feel good. And then like a week and a half later, on the tip from a friend, I went to check out Krishna Lunch on campus. And that happened to be Lord Nityananda's appearance day. And then I went to the temple and now...
Thank you. Krishna's mercy. Yeah, we'll need it.
Actually, there's a non-ISKCON Krishna temple near my house. And from young, me and my friend used to go there. We'll do some service and then we'll play. We have like ping pong table hidden in the temple and everything. So one day evening, it was a school break. So we went to the temple, we did something, and then we were just sitting down talking and playing. Then I decided, it was getting late, so I thought I'm going back home. When I came out from the temple, I saw my parents' car was passing. So I realized I don't have the house key. I went back to the temple. And 5 minutes later, about 3 devotees came in and they told, well, we are going to start a program in this temple. Before that, we just want to do some kirtan. And I always hated singing. One thing I hated in any temple program is to sing. And I wanted to run away, but they told me, just come and join. Then I joined. That's the first time I enjoyed singing. And that gave me the attraction to come for the following programs and everything else. Okay. And I was just thinking, if I missed that 5 minutes, I went back, the life would have been completely different.
Yes, that's the point. Our lives changed. Thank you. You can just keep it there. Yeah, that our lives changed by the intervention of Krishna. Just like Maharaj Parikshit. He was going to die in 7 days. He needed something to change his life. And therefore, the Lord sent Sukadeva Goswami. And this is what it means when we hear in the scriptures that the spiritual master rescues us. He actually personally rescues us. He comes to us in very personal ways when we need him. And it's up to us to recognize. Now, everyone doesn't recognize. The same experience may happen between me and you. But I may not recognize that, whereas someone else may recognize it and take advantage of it. And that's what we have to do. We have to take advantage. And so that's what's described further in these verses here. So that's the significance of the meeting of Sukadeva Goswami with Maharaj Parikshit and the meeting with all of us with Krishna in our lives individually. Now, the next subject that we want to talk about here today is the physical characteristics of Sukadeva Goswami. Every culture throughout history has their standards of beauty and everything like that, and sometimes they radically differ. But there are certain things described in the scriptures, the Vedic literatures, about the characteristics, the physical characteristics of a great person. And it's actually described that they went off to meet Krishna, the two of them. No, we just had two students walk out. I guess they went off to meet Krishna. Huh? Okay, well, that's good. Maybe they'll go to work like Clayton and come out a devotee. Well, both are devotees. So there are physical characteristics by which great personalities are known. And so these verses in today that we read describe the physical characteristics of Sukadev Goswami, and Prabhupada talks about that in the purports that accompany these verses. Physiognomical characteristics of great persons. Now, how many physiognomical characteristics of great persons are there? No, can you give me a number? Who can give me a number? 32. There are 32 characteristics of a great person described in the Vedic literatures. And when Lord Chaitanya is predicted, actually, in the Atharva Veda, it mentions that he will display all 32 of these qualities in his form. Let me just read to you what the verse says from the Atharva Veda. Toward the end of the period between 4,000 and 5,000 years in Kali Yuga, I will descend on earth as Gauranga, a golden complexioned saintly Brahmana, in a place by the Ganges shore, and later become the crest jewel of all sannyasis, exhibiting all my transcendental qualities, including supreme renunciation and complete detachment from material desires. In the form of Lord Gauranga, I will display all 32 bodily symptoms of a great personality with my arms extending to my knees. So this idea of arms extending to the knees, that's commonly known one of these 32 principles. Have you ever seen anyone with their arms extending to their knees? You've seen? Where? You said it. Okay. Creepy, says creepy. But that's what I mean. In different cultures, different times, there's different standards of things. So it looks creepy to us because we don't see people like that. Yeah.
I always feel like why not lose arms, go to his arms.
Okay.
I think it looks really cool. Like very regal.
Yeah, okay, yeah, well, that there's also a symptom with the arms. One of the symptoms is that their reach this way is equal to their height this way. And so anyway, these 32 characteristics are there. Now, I looked for them to define them in different ways, and I found a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that describes them in one way, but then I found a description, a complete description of the 32 qualities in a Wikipedia reference to Lord Buddha, where it's described. So let's read the translation from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then maybe some of the 32 from the other source. Translation, this is from the Adi Lila, chapter 14, text 15, where Nilambar Chakravarti is explaining to Jagannath Mishra, the father of Lord Chaitanya, the symptoms of a great person that he sees in the body of Lord Chaitanya. There are 32 bodily symptoms of a great personality. Five of his bodily parts are large, five fine, seven reddish, six raised, three small, three broad, and three grave. Purport. The five large parts are the nose, arms, chin, eyes, and knees. The five fine parts are the skin, fingertips, teeth, hair on the body, and hair on the head. The seven reddish parts are the eyes, soles, palms, palate, nails, and upper and lower lips. The six raised parts are the chest, shoulders, nails, waist, and mouth. The three small parts are the neck, thighs, and male organ. The three broad parts are the waist, forehead, and chest. The three grave parts are the navel, voice, and existence. Altogether, these are 32 symptoms of a great personality. This is a quotation from the Sumudrika, which is a Vedic scripture. So these are, I assume that they're the same, because, you know, Buddhism shares the same Sanskrit birth as the Vedic literature. So when we find a description of Lord Buddha, these 32 qualities that are also there from the Vedas, then I assume they're the same 32 bodily parts. But if they're not, they must be close in different ways, because they do share some of these same descriptions. Now, the first one of these is confusing to me. It says level feet. Does anybody know what that means? Does it mean flat-footed without an arch, or what does it mean? Flat-footed. Great person, you know. Well, again, maybe it's our cultural thing, but I mean, that this is why I'm concerned, because if it is arched feet, they tell us these days that arched feet is necessary for proper posture and things like that. But this is saying level feet, so I'm not exactly sure what it means. We talked a little about that in the Tai Chi, right? The stance and things like that. Okay. Long, slender fingers, toes and fingers finely webbed. Of course, a lot depends on the translations of these things, too. Thighs like a royal stag. Thighs are the small parts. Yeah, three small parts, the neck, thighs, the male organ. Yeah, right. So, okay. Stags, huh? Lean and fit, yeah. Okay. Lean and fit, okay, good. Golden-hued body, 10-foot aura around him. Okay. Lion-shaped body, jaw like a lion, four canine teeth, pure white. Canine teeth up, two up, two down, canine teeth. Saliva that improves the taste of all food. let's see another interesting ones here. A white curl that emits light between the eyebrows. Something here. Fleshy protuberance on the crown of the head. I don't know, these kind of differ. There's certainly a different description when we're talking about the color and the size and things like that in the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. But the point is that great personalities can be known by their physical characteristics. And this is not something completely foreign to us either. We call it the countenance of an individual gives some idea of their qualities as a person and things like that, how they walk, how they hold themselves, how they present themselves. That's even something accepted in our society today. So there are 32 signs of a great man like that, and there are an additional 80 minor characteristics of a great personality. He has clockwise marks on the abdomen. he has no right elbow. These are the minor characteristics that are found in a reference to Lord Buddha. I have no idea what it means. He has no right elbow. Maybe mistranslation or something like that. Yeah. His nose is well proportioned. Okay. Again, these are minor characteristics. There are 80 of them. But we know a saintly person. How do we know a saintly person when we see a saintly person? By hearing, yes. By their speech, what they speak. That's how we know them as being a great personality. And indeed, the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Rupa Goswami, and Srila Prabhupada in his translation, they say that a Vaishnava should not be rejected because of, you know, physical defects. So if we go around looking for a great person to have this interaction with that's special and it's mystical, and we have a conception in our mind that, well, I'm looking for a certain type of person, the absolute truth might walk right by us, you know, to the next person. Because a Vaishnava is known by his speech. And that brings us to the last area that we're going to talk about today, and that is the standard of greeting. If we read these verses, I was quite struck when I read these verses about how they met. And maybe it'd be worth reading it again just to describe what happened. Maharaj Parikshit, who is known as Vishnu Ratha, bowed his head to receive the chief guest, Sukadeva Goswami. At that time, all the ignorant women and boys ceased following Sukadeva Goswami. Receiving respect from all, Sukadeva Goswami took his exalted seat. Sukadeva Goswami was then surrounded by saintly sages and demigods, just as the moon is surrounded by stars, planets, and other heavenly planets. His presence was gorgeous, and he was respected by all. And here's Prabhupada's purport here. On Sukadeva Goswami's arrival at the meeting, everyone except Srila Vyasadeva, Narada, and a few others stood up. And Maharaj Parikshit, who was glad to receive a great devotee of the Lord, bowed down before him with all the limbs of his body. Sukadeva also exchanged the greetings and reception by embrace, shaking of hands, nodding, bowing down, especially before his father and Narada Muni. Thus he was offered the presidential seat at the meeting. You can just imagine embracing. I mean, how wonderful it is to see how Vaishnavas greet one another. This great personality comes and they gently are embracing him, and he's acknowledging everybody, nodding his head, shaking hands, sort of moving through the crowd. I mean, like a politician does these days. I mean, but this is a truly worthy experience that people are having to interact with Sukadeva Goswami in that way. And just the personalism of that the description about how he was seated. We always hear that Sukadeva Goswami is seated on the Vyasasana and he's speaking the Bhagavatam, the Maharaj Parikshit, in this great assembly of devotees. But how he sat there and what the interaction that took place, it's just such a wonderful description to see the personalism. You know, he came, and it's not just like he came and he sat on the throne, he started speaking. But there was these wonderful exchanges with everybody that probably went on for some time, so that everyone felt acknowledged and enlivened, you know, to be in that assembly and sit there and hear personally. Because if we don't have this type of a personal interaction, then the instruction that saintly persons can give us is not going to be accepted as deeply as it could be. And again, if you think about your experiences there, I can just imagine Mother Gaur Bhakti, you know, when someone comes to her house and they express some interest like Clayton, I mean, she probably was like over the moon with happiness and, you know, wanted to like, okay, you know, give him Krishna, you know. And she definitely, from what I know of her, she definitely takes that as, you know, a great opportunity of Krishna to give somebody that to introduce them to Krishna consciousness. And so the receptivity we have and the personalism that's involved make those instructions go deep into our heart. And so just appreciating this about how Sukadeva Goswami was seated on the Vyasasana gave me a whole new perception about the whole scene that took place there on the bank of the Ganges. This is actually a very, very, very important part of Vaishnava etiquette, how we deal with each other, because it makes effective the instructions we have to give. If we depend upon force or some type of rude behavior to introduce Krishna consciousness, how is it going to stick in the heart? If Raghatmika Dasi hadn't been so happy, and I mean, I had that encounter with her, there was also a voice that said in my head, "You should give her all your money." I said, "What?" It's not that she asked for it, but this voice came in my head, "You should give her all your money." So I thought, well, okay, she's nice enough. And so I checked my if I had my bus ticket. You know, I actually remember checking. I had my bus ticket, so I knew I could get back home. So I said, okay, yeah, and I gave her all my money. And she reciprocated by giving me that big stack of books like that. And so it was such a pleasant exchange, and it made all the difference in the world to my Krishna consciousness even to this day. And so how we interact with each other, how we execute Vaishnava etiquette among ourselves as well as among those we meet is very, very important. And so I just want to read you some brief statements on Vaishnava etiquette and how it relates to giving Krishna consciousness to others. This is an interesting little mock-up of a thing. I think it's from Radhana Swami's website. But it has this Dummies book, you know, the Dummies series. So it has Vaishnava etiquette for dummies. It looks like a real cover. Someone made it up, because even the sub-things say, an introduction to Vaishnava exchange for the culturally retarded. Learn how to love in plain English. Your guide to dismantling the fear of servitorship. The fun and easy way to learn how to serve Vaishnavas. But anyway, this is what they say here, and I think it's important. He says, it is stated that etiquette is the ornament of a Vaishnava. What does this mean? Is etiquette something only external or optional? We could draw an analogy. Is it possible to be wealthy but have no riches? Or what is the value of wealth if one uses no costly ornaments? Generally, one will decorate himself according to the degree of his wealth. If one is very rich, he will be adorned with only the finest ornaments and accessories. Similarly, for one who is profound in his Krishna consciousness, the jewels of Vaishnava etiquette will naturally grace all of his dealings and activities. So it's not that Vaishnava etiquette is an artificial thing. It springs from our heart of our Krishna consciousness. And it naturally graces all of his dealings and activities. The characteristics of a devotee are always subliminally manifest in all of his actions. We're talking about these qualities of a great person, 32 qualities of a great person. They're based on the inner purity, the inner character, not the other way around, not because you have these qualities, you're a great person. So the character is what's important. The depth of a Vaishnava is judged by his symptoms. The true devotee will therefore adorn himself unsparingly with the decorum of a Vaishnava in all respects. Accepting the identity of a Vaishnava necessitates a certain standard of behavior or etiquette. Vaishnava etiquette facilitates Krishna consciousness. It provides the criteria, the protocol, by which a devotee can act properly in every situation. Someone who is actually a devotee will be known by how much he displays good qualities. The consciousness of a devotee is manifest by his actions. If one has any depth of realization, the jewels of Vaishnava behavior will naturally pace all of his dealings and activities. We need to be aware that the vast majority of our exchanges are with devotees and the innocent public. Aparad is the only real stumbling block in spiritual life. We must become fearful of committing offense. This awareness will give sobriety and gravity to our behavior. We will naturally become humble. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will become pleased, and we will make advancement without serious obstruction. Srila Prabhupada's reputation depends on our behavior. In his compassion, he lifted us up from the very degraded background. He was even criticized by the less intelligent in India for doing so. In order to maintain Srila Prabhupada's good name and behavior, we should be very exemplary. If you went out on Krishna lunch and you were rude to the people coming through the line, do you think the word would spread around campus? Do you think people would stop coming to Krishna lunch? So think about that. Vaishnava etiquette. It's for our interactions, not only with devotees, but the innocent public as well. So, are there any questions or comments about these subject matters today? Anybody else? Yes.
A practical place where it's being used a lot nowadays is in the criminal department. Certain areas of criminology, they deal with the appearance of somebody and all the information they can derive from that appearance. It'd be interesting to see what their textbooks say about different features of the body or facial.
You have to forgive me, but it would be interesting to see what kind of what kind of profiling they do, which may not necessarily be fair.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah.
But I take your point, yes. I mean, and we were discussing the other day about how security has to be aware of persons, their movements, which may indicate they are up to no good. So, yeah, that's...
On another point, too, wasn't it somebody asked Prabhupada at one time, how could we recognize one of the disciples, or what distinguishes your disciples? And he said, you will see them by being proper gentlemen.
Perfect gentlemen. I'm not sure how it arose, but he said his disciples be known that they are perfect gentlemen. So it's again to the same thing we just were reading about Vaishnava etiquette. Sri Krishna.
I was gonna say I think that question was asked to Srila Prabhupada here in Gainesville by the reporter.
Oh really?
Amarendra Prabhu was telling the story, and the reporter was expecting like a list of qualities, you know, the devotee should be. Honest and sincere, all this and other stuff, and Prabhupada answered in one word. He said, "You should be perfect gentlemen. My disciples are perfect gentlemen."
Okay, all right. There it is, right in Gainesville. That's great. Thank you. Yes. Want to take the mic?
One thing I was noticing in the text was said that how the women and children were surrounding Shukdev Goswami initially. And then when Shukdev Goswami was greeted by others, then the women and children left. So I was thinking that how sometimes people are not able to recognize a great personality. So they were just kind of surrounding him, I'm assuming, because he was...
Avadhut.
He was an avadhut. But then when they realized that he was something different, then... they had no interest.
Yeah, that's very good, because that's one of the points I wanted to make. Their Vaishnava interaction, the Vaishnava interaction that they observed in the greetings that were given to Sukadeva Goswami was like preaching, and they understood, oh, now here's a great personality. So the way we behave influences others, and it influences them in a positive way, because they were disrespecting almost Sukadeva Goswami, mocking him. But when they saw the Vaishnava interaction, they saw Vaishnava etiquette being interacted, they understood, oh, now this is a great personality, and they offered respect themselves by backing up and going away. Yes, yeah, so that's the point I wanted to bring out. Thank you. Okay, Granta Rashi Mad Bhagavatam.